This is Coach Lee, and you're listening to The Door Report.
At Vanderbilt, it's Tim Corbin and the Vandy Boys, Jerry Stackhouse on the hardwood, and Clark Lee on the gridiron. Nashville, it's time to sit back, relax, grab a cold one, and enjoy the show. The Music City is our state, and West End is where we rock. You're listening to The Door Report, the premier Vanderbilt podcast for fans who bleed black and gold. Commodore Nation, anchor down.
Welcome into The Door Report. It is episode 226. We are recording on a Thursday night, July the 13th. This will be posted on Sunday, July the 16th. July 16th.
I wasn't sure either, Billy.
We are powered by Alaco Fine Wood Floors, family owned and operated for more than two decades. Alaco Fine Wood Floors is Nashville and Middle Tennessee's choice for premium quality hardwood floors. Since 1995, Jimmy Alaco and his army of employees have embodied the approach of taking pride in one's craft and providing superior customer service, growing from a one-man shop to a team of 23 professionals. If you're interested in contacting them, their headquarters are 2505 Winford Avenue in Berry Hill. Give them a call at 615-356-0303 or log on to their website. That's AlacoFineWoodFloors.com. Boys, we're back with another Summer Dog Day series. And guys, we're running out of time with these dog days.
It's really the last week.
Yeah, it's really the last week. SEC Media Days. SEC Media Days next week. Good call, Trev. Fall camp after that. So we are rocking and rolling with Vanderbilt football stuff. Of course, baseball has died down a little bit with the draft. I want to touch on the draft a little bit. Now, obviously, you know, it was regular. Nothing out of the ordinary really happened in the draft, but, you know, we'll get into the draft a little bit, talk about the SEC Media Days attendees for Vanderbilt along with Clark Lee, and then we'll get to our Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore. So really the top four, I guess you could say, most influential Vanderbilt athletes, coaches, heck, even an AD potentially, you know? So I don't know, how would I word that, Will? Athletic department members. So
there's no other way to phrase it. Just the Mount Rushmore,
the Mount Rushmore of Vanderbilt athletics.
Yeah. There's no other way to phrase what we're doing. I mean, it doesn't fall into any category. It's just the Mount Rushmore, the founding members who created the Vanderbilt athletics that we see today.
The Mount Rushmore.
I think that's a little bit different than any of the other lists that we've run over.
Yeah, and we've never done anything like this. I mean, I think this is the second year of Dog Day series in these summers, and we didn't do one like these last year. So, Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore coming up. Before we do get to that, though, don't forget to follow us on Twitter @door_report, Instagram @door.report. Like us on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And while you're at it, give our podcast 5 stars and a review on iTunes. All right, let's get to the breaking news.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
No matter what style you're going for, you can trust your flooring job to Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Take a walk through the woods in your home every day. Get your flooring job started today by calling 615-356-0303. Alaco Fine Wood Floors. Craftsmanship you can stand on.
All right, boys. First things first, and we won't spend too much time on these two notes, but I do want to start with the MLB draft. Enrique Bradfield goes 17 overall to the Baltimore Orioles. And then after that, Trev, there wasn't another Commodore drafted until, was it Patrick Riley?
I believe so.
I think it was Patrick Riley late.
Did Hunter Owen go
Hunter
before
Owen.
Patrick
okay.
Riley?
Yes.
Yeah, Hunter Owen, yeah.
You're right.
Hunter Owen went to the Royals, right? Pat went to the Bucks.
Yes. So, and then after that, Nick Maldonado got drafted. Yeah. RJ Schreck was drafted. Grayson Moore was drafted. So, you know, good for Vanderbilt baseball. Seven guys drafted. You know, I think Schreck was a guy that we all hoped would get drafted. Maldonado was a guy that I think fell back a little bit, but, you know, happy for him. But Trev, what do you think about Enrique landing in Baltimore? I think that's a loaded outfield. They've got a lot of young talent. And I want to get to the recruits first and some guys that we landed.
I was going to say this draft was
good to Vanderbilt.
Was very, very good for the future of Vanderbilt baseball. Yes, we need to talk about that.
Yes. So, but first, Enrique Bradfield, how do you think he fits in Baltimore?
Okay. I might sound like a little bit of a hater. I don't think Enrique is going to be a typical, like, mainstay starter in maybe that outfield, maybe somewhere else.
Yeah, that's loaded.
I also just realized I didn't plug in my microphone. So if I sound terrible right now, that's why.
How unprofessional of you.
Oh my God. I was like, something is missing on my desk right now. I'll get that plugged in, but I'll keep talking. I don't know how he fits into that. Here we go.
There we go. Okay. That is much better.
That's so much better.
There we go.
I know. Y'all should have told me. You're like, oh my God, he's back to like his early days to where he sounded like he was in like an underground tunnel because of these AirPods microphones are so bad. But yeah, I don't know how he fits in that outfield. I don't know if there's a particular outfield in Major League Baseball to where he's going to be the guy. I think what he's got going for him is he's got elite defense and he's got elite speed. So that's going to keep him in the majors for a very, very long time. Luckily now, I think with the way Major League Baseball is played, you have so many guys who come off the bench and get meaningful playing time with the way substitutions are made. And just with the way guys get their rest days, the days of somebody like Cal Ripken playing all those games is over. Enrique Bradfield, as soon as he gets called up to the majors, he's going to see legitimate playing time. He's going to see a lot of it. His glove and his speed definitely keep him in the major leagues. If he can get consistent playing time, I don't think it's silly to say that he probably wins a gold glove defensively. I just don't know if his bat can translate. Mm-hmm. And I'm only really basing that off
1 year,
sort of his down year that he had this year. And people are like, oh, well, he's still bat 270, 280. And it's kind of tough because like in the major leagues, 270 or 280, a lot of those guys are all stars, but in college baseball, it's not quite that. Typically you'd like to see him bat in the 300s, which he has. So maybe I'm looking into his bat too much this year. Obviously the Orioles loved him to take him at 17. He did drop a little bit. A lot of the earlier mocks during the season had him a top 10. I think one of the lowest I saw him is number 11 overall. But for the Orioles, it's obviously a great pick. I think for Enrique, you want to go to somebody like the Orioles who have a ton of young talent and finally you're putting it together and you're seeing these guys come up from the minors. They have a great farm system. And I don't know, it looks like a great team for young guys to play for.
So I'm not the baseball expert, but it feels like that pick for the Orioles at 17 is just can't miss value for the Orioles. The speed is going to translate. The speed is speed.
Especially with bigger bases.
And with what, you know, I'm not watching MLB night in, night out like maybe you are, Trevor. But it seems that the MLB is transitioning into more of like the money ball, the analytical situational stuff. And immediately once he is called up onto a major league roster in pinch running situations, he's going to be extremely dangerous. He's going to be able to play any position in that outfield and be an absolute weapon. There's no difference how those baseballs travel in the air. The difference in struggle is always with the bat. And like you said, he had a down year this past season. And I think power may have been a reason why he fell from that top 10, top five, even projection that we saw at the beginning of the year, because the majors are turning into, you know, home run or strikeout type of situation. And Enrique doesn't really fit that. I mean, he's the more bunt for a hit type guy, pinch runner situation. So I'm not sure where Billy went. But before we transition to the Mount Rushmore, old Billy Boy is, has walked away from his computer.
I'll say this too, in regards to Enrique, I totally agree. I think if he can, which then again, you never really know what these farm system coaches are teaching them. Obviously, like you said, the name of the game in Major League Baseball right now is home runs and strikeouts. And really, in Major League Baseball, strikeouts aren't even that big of a deal anymore. A couple of years ago, they were obviously devastating. But now, if you're a high strikeout guy, as long as you hit bombs, nobody really cares. I mean, you can look at Aaron Judge, for example. I think if they could, I don't even know if you could say translate his game to this, or if this actually is already his game. Just if you're Enrique Bradfield and you're at the plate, dude, just be an OBP guy. Who the hell cares about batting percentage? Who cares about your OPS, slugging? Who cares? If I'm Enrique Bradfield, objective whenever I'm at the plate is to get on base, whether that be walk, hit by pitch, drop third strike, anything. Just get on base. If you hit a home run, beautiful, awesome. But you're more dangerous on first than you are anything. So if he can just get to first, he can create a lot of havoc. So I don't know if they would try and translate him to a power guy. I would imagine that the Orioles, as well as they've been drafting recently, their scouts and farm system guys probably realize he's not a power guy, and they've watched tape, they've done studies, they've checked out all of his analytics, and they know that, okay, this is probably a dink and dunk guy, and if we can just get a walk or a single, just get him on base, and who really cares? But then again, you never know with farm system coaches. A lot of the times they develop talent really, really well. As you can see with the Orioles, they've done a stellar job with everybody who's come up from their farm system. But there, of course, have been some horror stories with farm systems. I think right now the one that resonates with all Vanderbilt fans is how the Texas Rangers have treated Jack Leiter. Have totally, I don't want to say destroyed his confidence because he's on a bounce back, but they have mishandled his development grossly.
Yeah. And you know, for Enrique, I like what you said, Trevor. He doesn't have to, I don't even think he has to be a 300 hitter. Like if he,
I don't
he
think can so, sit, no.
If he can sit 260, 270, get on base, play five star caliber all-star defense. Yeah. I mean, it's steal bases.
If Enrique Bradfield hits 250 and keeps up his defense, Enrique Bradfield is a Major League Baseball all-star.
Right. And I think, you know, you think about the three tools, defense, you know, speed, and your hitting ability. You know, I know there's five tools, but those are three most important tools. He's got those down, right? He's got speed. He's got defense. Maybe not hitting quite yet, but two of those three tools he's got down. And I'm excited for him. I think, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? There's not a ton of room in that Orioles outfield right now, but they've done a great job of developing outfielders as well. So I think it's a good spot for Enrique to land at. Let's go to the high school guys. And you said it, Trevor, Vanderbilt made out well, right? The draft was kind to Vanderbilt commits this year. Now, I guess they're kind to Vanderbilt, right? The commits, they'd want to get drafted. But I think Ethan McElvain told scouts and GMs he's going to Vandy. And maybe a similar thing happened with Braden Holcomb. I mean, you know, and Ethan McElvain is a Nolensville kid, one of the best pitchers in the state, up there in the country, right? He was going to be a 3-4-5 round type guy, so he had to have told GMs and scouts that he's going to Vanderbilt. So to get McElvain and Holcomb secured in that class is huge. I mean, that hasn't happened the last couple of years, so that's massive. We all know that. And for McElvain, Trev, that's a guy that, you know, I could see maybe getting some time this year. Miller Green, the guy from Lipscomb, I think he's probably two years away, something like that. Mm-hmm. But man, I mean, that's big. And I think that Corbin is probably elated to finally get some good news out of the draft.
Yes. In a year to where so far it's not over yet, but Vanderbilt hasn't, then again, it's Tim Corbin, maybe been as active in the portal as we would all like. He gets some great news with this draft. Obviously, Max Clark was never going to come to Vanderbilt. I'm still not entirely sure. And maybe I'm just a simple human being. I'm still not entirely sure why you even recruit someone like Max Clark, knowing that he's going to be a top five, top 10 Major League Baseball draft pick.
Yeah. Other than offering him in eighth grade.
Yeah. But like, maybe there's like a part of it that's like, oh, well, what if, and if he doesn't, we still have the scholarship, but I don't know.
That what if usually never happens.
Exactly. Like Max, same thing with Jones last year, Andrew Jones, same thing, Vanderbilt commit. But particularly for McIlvaine, of course, everybody knows his brother, Chris McIlvaine, was great at Vanderbilt, is in the Cincinnati Reds farm system, plays for my great Cincinnati Reds. I think he's I think he's in double A with the Daytona Tortugas right now. But I'm on Ethan's Perfect Game website or profile. And if you don't follow high school baseball recruiting that much, I'm just going to rattle off some numbers to you and just show you that this kid's got this stuff. So in the state of Tennessee, he's the number one overall recruit.
Yep.
He's the number one overall left-handed pitcher in the state of Tennessee. Nationally, he's the number 49 best baseball recruit in the nation, and nationally the fifth best left-handed pitcher in the nation. We know Tim Corbin absolutely loves his left-handers. I mean, all of your weekend guys were lefties this year, which is unusual. Perfect Game has a note. They said breaking down, it's not really a player comp, but they says great frame to project on, easy low effort delivery, up to 95 on Double A Classic with a big breaking ball plus command potential. So he really dots the zone right now. 6'4", 210, not done growing, maybe tops out at, I don't know, 6'6", maybe seems like a stretch, but 6'5", he'll probably put on some weight because 210 on a 6'4 frame is pretty skinny. Yeah. But, I mean, that's somebody who you can get really excited about. And we're, of course, going to see him play in midweek games this year.
He's
probably going to get start midweek games.
Yeah.
He's someone I'm super excited about. Fastball velo of 95 at 18 years old. That's impressive.
That's big time. That's big. And he's a Tennessee kid out of Nolensville. Anytime you get a Tennessee kid and you keep him away from the school out east, that's a positive. Mm-hmm. So, Will, any thoughts on how Vanderbilt fared in the draft?
I didn't watch. To be honest, I don't care. We're inching closer to football season.
You don't
not
care.
Not worried about the MLB draft. I don't care. I was excited to see Bradfield get picked at number 17 after we got out of the top 10 picks. Saw Vanderbilt wasn't going to have Max Clark. I tuned it out. Doesn't matter to me. I'm on to Hawaii and the Mount Rushmore Vanderbilt athletics.
Trevor, it's like Trevor.
You don't even care about Braden Holcomb. That was a big get for Vanderbilt.
I was going to say
start.
My mind is so focused on football season, on the upcoming football season. And I just can't even wrap my head around thinking about Vanderbilt baseball. No offense to the Vandy boys. No offense to the MLB draft. It's just every day I wake up with intrusive thoughts about football season, and they're getting louder and louder.
You must hate Aria Gerson's Twitter then.
The lack of football content previewing the season has been concerning, I will say, from Aria.
The funny thing is, last thing on the draft, I got, it was weird not seeing Tim Corbin up on the set with MLB Network and maybe even ESPN.
Well, he was also doing his camp this week, wasn't he? So I'm wondering if that.
Yes. Yeah, he was the classic Tim Corbin slide on the slip and slide. He's still got it. That's an annual sign that the word retire is not in Tim Corbin's vocabulary, because how old is he? 62. And he's jumping.
He's up.
I know one of the kids that was at the camp. He said he was like 6 feet up in the air. I mean, that's.
Yeah. I saw somebody on Twitter mention this. It's not really getting off topic, but I do want to talk about Braden Holcomb a little bit before we get into the Mount Rushmores. Alan Espinal was at the camp.
Yes. And he didn't get drafted. Or was he draft eligible?
He was draft eligible.
Okay, yeah, he didn't get drafted. Jack Bulger didn't get drafted either, so I think that means both of them will be back. You know, at least I presumably so. So mm-hmm. we'll see. That's Vanderbilt in the draft. What else was I going to get to? Is I going to get to anything else?
A little bit of a note. I don't know if you guys are already looking at mock drafts for Major League Baseball next year, but right now, I forget who I was looking at. I think it was baseball. It might have been Baseball America. I'm not sure. I saw a mock draft that had Davis Diaz slotted at number 21 overall for next year.
Wow. So. Yeah, I can see that. He's done. I think he's had a good summer on the Cape, and you know, he really came on last year. So I think he's going to be a double digit home run type guy this year. So
Vanderbilt needs it.
You know, sure I'm not trying to bring up another baseball topic, but there was a pitching transfer that we had hyped up pretty heavily on Twitter.
Chase
that
Burns,
did land in black and gold, but not the right black and gold.
It was good for everybody.
I didn't think about that. Yeah,
it was the best case scenario for everybody, right? For Vanderbilt, you know, he's out of the SEC. You don't have to see him at Georgia or LSU. And for Chase Burns, you don't have to face those SEC bats week in, week out. So I think it was the best case scenario for everybody.
I really thought he was going to come to Vanderbilt.
The best case of a bad scenario.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The best case is he's in the right black and gold and in the right pinstripe
exactly.
black uniforms.
One more note, guys, before we get to our Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore. SEC Media Days next week. Always a blast of a week. And that's the unofficial start of the college football season. I mean, it ends talking season and you're starting to study, right? You're studying. You still got about 4 weeks to go before the season starts, but that's it. You can start to feel it. So Hawaii, how was it? Is it 45 days, Trev? 46?
It 44. Is 44.
Oh, 44. Wow, my goodness.
Well, closer
days
than
away.
You thought.
So yeah, Ethan Barr, Jalen Mahoney, and Will Shepard are all joining Clark Lee in Nashville next week, right? At the Grand Hyatt Hotel in Nashville. Clark Lee on Tuesday night, they're doing a live primetime SEC Nation show. Clark Lee's going to be on the set with those guys on Broadway. I think they're on Broadway. So it's going to be it's going to be a party.
Ooh,
it's in Nashville.
I might go to that.
So yeah, they got a free concert too. So if you're a Vanderbilt fan looking for something to do Tuesday night, go check out Clark Lee on the SEC Nation set. But guys, real quick, what do you think about, I don't think Mahoney and Shepard surprises, but Ethan Barr, what do y'all think about Clark?
It's a little bit of a
Ethan
sleeper.
Barr?
I mean, that reminds me of Bresnahan last year.
Yeah.
In my opinion, a guy that's put in his time with the program is going to be a good representative. But
veteran.
I think the media day selection for who you are going to bring is a little bit different, because unless you have a literal national Heisman contender superstar, then you're going to bring guys in their senior season that you know that they've been seeing the older guys go to this event, represent the university. And that's all you're looking for. It's
almost
not
like a
reward.
It's not the
best
players.
Not necessarily. Exactly. I mean, I think Will Shepard is probably outside of maybe CJ Taylor, but I'm going to go with Will Shepard, the most talented guy and NFL ready, definitely guy on the roster. Yeah. But other than that, you look at who's gone in the past. I mean, last year, I think Mike Wright attended, Bresnahan attended. Who else went with Clark to media day? I'm missing somebody.
Anfernee.
Okay. So I think it kind of follows that same path, that same cycle. I think you have Will Shepard, the most talented guy, and then you have two guys that have kind of earned it through putting in their time in the program, and Mahoney and Barr. So it doesn't surprise me, but I could see some issues within that program of guys that maybe wanted to attend and be the face of the football program.
CJ wasn't happy, Trev.
Yep, that's what
I mean.
At.
Hey, dude. here's the thing. I'm going to spin zone the hell out of this. Vanderbilt, I don't even think even if he was upset that he wasn't going, I don't think that's a diva thing at all. And Vanderbilt has had literally no alphas, no like big dogs
this
on their
is a good
football
problem
team
to have.
For our, this is a, you want a guy like that who is like And maybe we're putting words in his mouth, but like, you want a guy who's like, oh, it should have been me. Like, you want a guy like, you want a guy like Will Shepard, that whenever AJ Swan doesn't pass him the ball, even though AJ's QB one, is in the huddle like, yo, throw me the ball. Give me the ball right now. I think you want guys like that. Is it a, I don't think it's a problem. I think more than anything, and maybe I'm just spin zoning the hell out of this, I think that's awesome. I think you should have dogs like that on the team who'd be like, yeah, I want to go represent the program. I want to go talk about what this team's capable of doing. I want people to know my name and what we're capable of. So I think that's a wonderful quote problem, which I don't think is a problem at all. But no, yeah, I want dudes who are like pissed off. That's like, no, like, let me go. Like, I'm like, I'm the guy, you know what I mean? Like, well, I really like that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying CJ hasn't earned it, because you would probably argue he has. But Ethan Barr, I mean, he went through those last years of Mason.
Ethan Barr has been through hell and back.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Ethan Barr deserves an opportunity. He's well spoken. He's a veteran. He's a leader on the team. So good on him. Shepard, Mahoney, I think those two guys are pretty expected. But next year, CJ will get his opportunity.
AJ,
most likely, probably another veteran on defense. And Clark does it differently. I think Mason took a couple younger guys, you know, maybe some of those years. But, you know, Clark's he's a senior leader type of guy, right? I mean, that's who he is. So, again, who you take with you to SEC Media Days really doesn't matter. I mean, I saw where Elijah McAllister is going to be there with Auburn.
That was incredibly interesting. I think, too, with SEC Media Days.
Is that good
days,
or bad this, for Auburn?
I don't know. I think I'm seeing Will's face right now. I think we had probably the same reaction whenever I saw the list. It was like, oh, okay. I think, too, with Media Days, a lot, and this isn't saying nobody is, like, particular players aren't good ambassadors or aren't good in front of the camera. But I think, too, you want to bring guys who maybe aren't as talented on the football field, but who are going to be good ambassadors for the program.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's probably why Mike Wright went last year.
He was phenomenal.
Just about to say.
Because he was great in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. He was great in front of the mic, and he wasn't the best quarterback on the roster, as we know. So I think too, part of it is like a publicity, not like a stunt, but maybe optics. I don't know. Yeah, it's more theater than it is really anything.
Yeah. So we'll see. Jalen Mahoney, Will Shepard, Ethan Barr will be with Clark Lee on Tuesday. Clark will take the podium at 9 a.m. So that'll be fun. It's always a blast at SEC Media Days. First time in Nashville. So we shall see. All right. Vanderbilt, Mount Rushmore. Let's get into it. We'll start with the same order. We'll go Will, Trevor, me. We'll start at number four, we'll go 4-3-2-1. Will, take it away.
Are we going 4-3-2-1, or is this just straight up we're painting the picture of the Mount Rushmore? Because I don't have mine in any particular order.
Yeah, I don't have mine in order.
Okay,
either. I think Mount Rushmore too is just like,
it's just,
you're right. You're
it's
right.
Just it's no order.
It's not rankings. I messed up with that. Okay, so yeah, let's just go R4.
Jump into it.
That's gonna be long, but let's ride.
That's right. So my first one, I think there is somebody on this list. It's not going to be my first one that all of us should have on this list. And anybody responding with their Mount Rushmore should have on this list. That's not going to be the first name I read. The first name I read is going to be somebody that none of us watched do anything associated with Vanderbilt athletics. And that's Dan McGugin.
Oh,
and because of that,
I didn't
the McGugin,
that is
the
so,
McGugin Athletic
so good.
Center. Coached Vanderbilt football from 1904 to 1917 and from 1919 to 1934 with an all-time record of 197-55-19, won 11 conference titles, and General Neyland was hired for the sole purpose in 1926, given one to beat Vanderbilt, beat McGugin. Mm. That was the reason that Tennessee hired General Neyland. And also, just reading into this just a little bit, he played on Michigan's point-a-minute teams that outscored their opponents 1,211-12 in 1901 and 1902. So that was just a, yeah, that doesn't even make sense to me. But talk, that's how badly they outscored their opponents. Decent point differential.
Did they even wear pads back then?
You know, those were dogs. Those were gritty guys. They rejected modernity. No face mask needed.
Their halftime, instead of drinking water, they were doing opium.
Dude, they were smoking cigs in between quarters. Like, everybody else was rehydrated.
Back then, like, they're chewing tobacco leaves.
I'm pretty sure Dan McGugan was like an offensive lineman as well. Like, he was a guard.
180 pounds.
When he was playing. Yeah, literally. Go look at his photo online, and that man was touted as one of the best offensive linemen in the country, I believe, during his time. So Dan McGugan, number one. Can't even argue with that one. Trevor, Billy, I'm kind of curious if either of you had him on your Mount Rushmore here.
Okay, I didn't, which I guess kind of makes me feel bad now. I know.
Yeah, I did not. I didn't even think about Dan McGugan, which I'm embarrassed by. I mean, Will, you went back to the catacombs.
It was just so long ago.
Yeah,
yes.
Like, that's the Stone Age.
The McGugan Center. Yeah. Who do you think is on Mount Rushmore right now? Do you think they're slapping up presidents from, like,
that's a good point.
George W. Bush and Barack Obama aren't sitting up there on Mount Rushmore.
I say this to you.
Thomas Jefferson, Teddy Roosevelt, who else is on there? George Washington.
If you have
Abraham Lincoln, named him off, easy money.
If you have McGugan on there, do you have Bob Dudley?
I was going to ask.
No.
All right. Fraud. Fraud.
John Ingram. Ingram
I
Court.
Think, I wanted. So
I think
that
you can make an argument
only,
that John Ingram should be on there.
This is hard.
That is my only long ago historical name on the list. Well, I take
and,
that.
And
back.
That's
no,
a good
not.
One. That's okay. But I respect that one. So, okay. So let's. Are you going one by one here? I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're rotating.
All right. Trev, yep. You're up.
All right. My not number one, but I guess first in order to my Mount Rushmore is the late great Perry Wallace. First black man in SEC basketball history, broke the color barrier in SEC basketball. Local legend, went to Pearl High School, now known as Pearl Cone. Absolutely broke down a barrier and paved the way for minorities to be able to play basketball in the Southeastern Conference, and did it during a very tumultuous, would put it lightly, a very disgusting period in American history during the 1960s, the Civil Rights Movement. And he went to a lot of places to where he wasn't welcome. I read his book recently by Andrew Marinus, and it talked about whenever he went to play Ole Miss down in Mississippi. The things that were said to him, that were thrown on him, and he never once retaliated, played hard, played true to the game, was a great representative for Vanderbilt athletics, and not just Vanderbilt athletics, for the mid-state and the state of Tennessee. Absolutely great basketball player, went on to be a lawyer, and then was a professor at George Washington University, professor of law. So recently passed. I think one of the great things that Vanderbilt has done was naming part of 25th yeah. Avenue Perry Wallace Way. Shout out to Art Goldfinger. I think that was his idea. Absolutely one of the best things yes. Vanderbilt has done in recent memory is naming 25th Ave after Perry Wallace.
No, amen. Amen to that. I mean, if he's a hard guy to leave out of your Mount Rushmore for Vanderbilt. And
jersey number retired, hanging in the rafters in Memorial.
Yeah, I mean, the history, you think of Mount Rushmore, you think of history, right? You think of roots, you think of tradition, right? And so, you know, a lot of these are going to be guys from back in the day, which I like. And so that requires some research. So, I mean,
I also don't want to put Billy on the spot, but I recently found out that I was reading this book on Perry Wallace, that Billy's grandfather is an integral part to the famous Father Ryan Pearl game that happened at Municipal.
Yep, he sure is. He was the coach at Father Ryan back in the day, and they call that game the game that changed the South, because he integrated sports in the South.
Your grandfather
basketball.
was the first was the first head coach of the fully integrated basketball, high school basketball team, right?
Yes. Yeah. 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 And Perry Wallace played on that Pearl Cone team that Fatherland played against. So, I mean, you go back to Nashville sports history, you can learn a lot. And I love it, you know, kind of going deep into the history book. So that's a good one, Trev. Perry Wallace, Will Head, Dan McGugin. And for me, I'm going back into the history books as well. A guy by the name of George McIntyre, 1982. Oh
my God, such a good pick.
Yeah, I had to throw him in there. 1982. Such a good pick. And I don't think many people know this. He was the 82 National Coach of the Year. He put Vanderbilt in.
I did not know that.
In a bowl game, they beat Tennessee. They beat Florida. I think they beat Georgia as well. I mean, they beat some really, really good teams. They ended up losing to Air Force in the Hall of Fame Bowl. But George McIntyre really laid the foundation for Vanderbilt football. Now, how strong of a foundation was it? Probably, I mean, it's not Alabama. It's not Georgia. But I really do think, and I'll go to the grave saying this, without that 1982 team, I don't think you get, you know, some of the late success of Bobby Johnson and even maybe James Franklin. Like George McIntyre served 6 years at Vanderbilt. I mentioned the Hall of Fame Bowl. He actually passed away after a decade battle with multiple sclerosis. He was 76 years old. So obviously thoughts with his family. But I mean, you talk about his family, he's got a grandson by the name of George McIntyre, who plays quarterback at Brentwood Academy, and Vanderbilt fans want him at Vanderbilt, deservedly so.
I think everybody in America wants him.
Yeah, yeah, not just Vanderbilt. But he was named head coach of Vanderbilt in 1979. They went 8-3 that year in 1982. Five straight wins. They beat Tennessee, Kentucky, Ole Miss. I mean, that team was really good. Watson Brown was the offensive coordinator of that team. Whit Taylor was the quarterback out of Shelbyville, Tennessee. I mean, guys, this guy, he's hard to leave off. He ranks fifth among the university's all-time winningest coaches. I mean, you could argue he's the best coach. And now Tim Corbin owns this, but I mean, he's in the top 2-3 of best Vanderbilt coaches of all time in any sport, really. I really think he was that good. And I've asked people before, he's one of the nicest guys. You know, he orchestrated that Vanderbilt football team in the early 80s and built a foundation, you know? And so I had to put George McIntyre in that list. That's kind of that's as far back historically as I'm going to go. But, man, Perry Wallace, Dan McGugin, those are two pretty good names as well.
It's a strong start.
Billy, I'll ask you this. Billy and Will, I want to hear your opinion on this. This might be a little – I'm not giving a take right now. I just want to know y'all's takes. Is Coach McIntyre the best Vanderbilt football coach in the modern era?
No.
Now there is one name obviously.
It's James Franklin. It's not even comparable.
Yeah, I think you got to go James Franklin. But you know, George McIntyre back in the day, I mean,
I don't want to hate on Billy's pick. But, like, he had one season going to a bowl game in 1982. James Franklin consistently had brought Vanderbilt to the top of the
conference. I don't think he had just one, did he?
No.
He only went to one.
Let's see. He was an assistant.
I'm not trying to hate on the pick.
So, I think they might have made one when he was an assistant at Vanderbilt in the 70s. But I think Will's right as a head coach. But I think the bottom line is, like, historically, like, that's the guy – that
I mean, that 82 season kept Vanderbilt relevant, I would say. Like, that's something that they were able to hit. Vanderbilt fans were able to hang their hat on.
And
until Bobby Johnson was able to break through.
Right. He was there 6 years, and it may not have been the most successful 6 years, but he stayed longer than Franklin. Franklin went to Penn State, you know, I don't know about ruined Vanderbilt's reputation.
Didn't leave a bad taste in the mouth.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think you can put Franklin on Vanderbilt's Mount Rushmore. Now,
if anybody included James Franklin on their Mount Rushmore, I would have like a personal problem with them, I think.
So yeah, McIntyre is my big football person, right? I and it's hard, guy. I mean, I went and I picked, I got to have a football guy on here. Wasn't going to pick James Franklin. I came oh so close to Jay Cutler, but I ended up picking George McIntyre, just the history, the roots, you know, great family. I mean, his, you know, I think a lot of their family still lives in Nashville and are Vanderbilt type people. So yeah, I had to put McIntyre
Mike
in there.
Mike McIntyre coached for Vanderbilt as well, didn't he?
That's a good question. He's at FIU right now. He has coached at a lot of different places. That's a good question, Trev. I'm not sure, but that's his son. I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
So yeah. And
he played at Vanderbilt.
Yes. So Mike, I think
never
that's
coached,
what you're
but played.
Of. Yeah. He played at Vanderbilt. Yeah. So it runs in the family, you know, and I think that's a good pitch. Like
George,
if you're Clark
home,
if you're Clark Lee to George McIntyre, your grandfather coached here, your dad played here. Let's keep it rolling, you know? So I had to put George McIntyre in there. Will, roll, keep it rolling.
The number two on my Mount Rushmore, I think I'm going to go ahead and get this one out of the way. I'm assuming that everybody here, Trevor, Billy, that both of you have this man on your list, and that is Tim Corbin. The easiest
on
pick,
my list.
The Legend. Easiest and most obvious pick of this entire podcast. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. It's playing out in front of your eyes. I think we talk about the brand that Tim Corbin has helped create with the Vandy Boys every single episode that we do. So I'm not going to dig into the numerous accomplishments from Tim Corbin since 2003, but NCAA tournament appearances, Vanderbilt prior to Tim Corbin had only gone in 73, 74, and 1980. And with Tim Corbin, 04, 06, 07, 08, 09, 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, every single year until current 2023. Going into conference tournament champions prior to Tim Corbin, only once in 1980. Tim Corbin gets here. They've won three conference tournament championships in baseball. Billy, Trevor, I don't want to steal any stats or any thunder that you guys have, but that's my number two. Tim Corbin, national championship, first one in any major sport in the modern era in 2014, and another one in 2019. No slight at the women's bowling team, but Vanderbilt baseball has kept them extremely relevant in the SEC, and Tim Corbin's kind of changed the entire culture of baseball in the SEC. You've seen it with Tony Vitello at Tennessee. You've seen an increased attention from SEC athletic departments across the country because of the resources that Tim Corbin convinced a very stingy Vanderbilt athletic department to pour into baseball, and it paid off, and he created a very unique brand in the Vandy Boys. So I think it's nobody would disagree with Tim Corbin on the Mount Rushmore of Vanderbilt.
We've all got Tim on our Mount Rushmore. Trev, let's just keep it rolling. I'll give my two cents here. Over the last 9 seasons, 4 trips to the College World Series finals. Like that doesn't happen. Right?
Insane.
I mean, think about that. The finals. Like that's like, I guess maybe Alabama has done that in football, but I don't even know if they have. Like that's incredible. So 17 straight NCAA tournament berths. That's the longest streak in the SEC. 54 players have been named All-Americans, including 18 who have received first-team All-American recognition. 31 of Corbin's players have been named freshman All-American, and 29 of them have made major league appearances. So, it's just everything you want in an elite program. You're winning national titles. You are developing major league talent. You are getting them back to campus, right? You have a professional locker room, right? That guys come back and they want to come back, right? It's not you go to college and you're done with that program. No, look at David Price. He invested back. He paid Tim Corbin back. I'm sure Dansby Swanson will do the same when he gets in that position, probably soon. I mean, you can't say a whole lot else about Tim Corbin. He's a legend. He's the best coach in Vanderbilt sports history. And it's unreal what he has done in his 22 now, I think it is 22 years. I think he's going into a second
19 seasons, I believe.
I think he's going into his 22nd. I think he just finished his 21st.
Well, he started in 03 as the
head coach. So it's either 20 or 21 seasons, I think, though. But nonetheless, unbelievable what he's done on West End. I mean, you got the renderings released of of the new stadium that'll be out. He's excited about that. So just there's nothing much else to say. I mean, Tim Corbin is the gold. He's created the gold standard of college baseball. And, well, like how you said, everyone followed, right? Everyone looked at, wait, Vandy is investing in baseball? Let's do the same, right? I think LSU and Vandy and maybe Florida, right? Those are the top tier.
South Carolina.
Yeah, but, you know, even then, that was really it. You know, then you see Tennessee, you see Mississippi State's always been there. But, I mean, Vanderbilt was kind of the modern age of approach to college baseball. So, and Tim Corbin's behind it.
Yes.
So, Corbs is a legend. He's on our Mount Rushmore.
Yes. I actually don't have Tim Corbin on my list.
Oh, wow.
I'm just playing. I totally, totally have.
I was looking on how I can kick Trevor off of this Zoom stream right now.
I was about to terminate the door port.
Yeah, that's
it was a good run, boys. He's on my list. I will ask this though, Billy. You just mentioned it. He's obviously the greatest coach in Vanderbilt athletics history. Now with this Mount Rushmore, I think a couple of us have people who weren't actually athletes, which Tim Corbin wasn't a Vanderbilt athlete, but people who were involved in Vanderbilt sports, like one of mine, he played for a Vanderbilt a long time ago, but he's not known as a Vanderbilt athlete. Is Tim Corbin the most influential Vanderbilt athletics person ever?
Because
I think he is.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
if you only had to pick one person out of everybody who has ever been involved with Vanderbilt athletics, and you say this person is the gold standard, this is the person who represents Vanderbilt, this is the person who is the best at what they did, I think it has to be Tim Corbin.
Yeah. It's funny. The only other people are Vanderbilt baseball players.
yes.
It's like, I was thinking, okay, maybe Dansby, maybe David Pratt. Yeah, I mean, Corbin, right? He produced those guys.
That's...
Like, it's really, like, and it's nothing against Vanderbilt, but, you know, when you think of, like, if you polled America, right, American sports fans, you know, and you said, who's the first person that comes to mind when you think of Vanderbilt athletics? It's Tim Corbin. Like, and it's the phrase Vanderbilt baseball, right? They have a good baseball team, don't they? Like,
they have their own nickname, the Vandy Boys.
Yeah. Yep. So
they have their own trademark nickname.
And he coined that, right? After the 2019 national championship, he gave a whole speech about why the Vandy Boys name was and how it was created, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's a big proponent of that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but he reminds me, Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt baseball reminds me of Coach K and Duke basketball. It just does. Private school, right?
Really good comp.
You know, Duke, I think they say the brotherhood or, you know, something like that. And you know, they develop professional guys. But it's baseball.
That's a really
and
good comp.
You know, so, but again, Tim Corbin, he's done it his own way, you know, and that's the way he decided. And I think it has laid a footprint and a foundation and a blueprint for a coach like Clark Lea to. I know it's different sports, but I mean
Clark Lea is a football Tim Corbin.
Exactly. So and without Tim Corbin, you don't get that inspiration and blueprint, right? So he's done just an unbelievable amount. It's hard to put into words, honestly.
Well, and I hate to keep going on about I don't really actually hate to go on about Corbin at all, even though we have other people to go. And you want to talk about somebody who cares about not just Vanderbilt baseball. I know we hate to bring up James Franklin, but Tim Corbin, James Franklin talks about it regularly.
He was the biggest James Franklin fan.
And how much Tim Corbin helped the football program. And I think you even see it now with the football program that Tim Corbin is in the corner of these guys. It could be golf. It could be women's bowling. And Tim Corbin is there being the biggest fan of Vanderbilt athletics, period. So I think he has to be the number one overall just Vanderbilt person.
No doubt.
I mean, I think James Franklin even, I could be misremembering, but I think James Franklin or Tim Corbin and Maggie even would babysit James Franklin's kids.
Yeah,
I could be misremembering that, but I'm pretty positive I remembered him saying that.
Yeah, and I saw James Franklin at the Vanderbilt Kentucky series.
He came to support Tim Corbin. That, I mean, and even as much as you hate to say it, Tim has also been spotted on the sideline at Penn State football games. I'm not going to hold that against him. That's awesome. He seems like a great friend.
And Bill Belichick is another guy that has
Billy B is a big Vandy boys fan.
Yeah,
spotted with a Vanderbilt hat multiple times. Daughter goes to Vanderbilt, I believe.
Yep, because of Tim Corbin. So
yep,
you know, you go back, like Tim Corbin is the source. Like
yes,
you're like, oh, why is Dansby Swanson? Oh, he played at Vandy. Oh yeah, Corbin. It's just he is the source at Vanderbilt, right? And he's still there. And hopefully for a long period of time. Right now we don't know how much longer, but we'll see. So yeah, Tim Corbin, no doubter. Will, who's your third?
This is where it gets more interesting. This is where hairy. I think we're gonna have a little more discussion. Yeah. So my number three, I almost made it Roy Skinner as my number three, but I couldn't let it back.
That would have been so
my number three. My number three. It's not Roy Skinner. Is going to be. A little controversial here in Kevin Stallings.
Oh,
longest tenured basketball coach Willie in Vanderbilt B. basketball history. The winningest Vanderbilt coach in Vanderbilt basketball history. Prior to Kevin Stallings becoming Vanderbilt's head basketball coach, Vanderbilt had been to 7 NCAA tournaments all time. Kevin Stallings came in, he went to 7 NCAA tournaments, and as we know, the only appearance after that has been with Bryce Drew coaching Kevin Stallings recruited players immediately after Kevin Stallings leaving the program and heading to Pittsburgh in 2017. Ever since Kevin Stallings left, the curse of Kevin Stallings has been felt inside a Memorial Gym. So I'm trying to lift that curse by placing Kevin Stallings on my Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore. And I know it sounds crazy to have him on this list as McGugan and Tim Corbin were ahead of Kevin Stallings. But once you get past those two, it's kind of hard to argue with the impact and longevity of Kevin Stallings' career. I'm not saying he was the foundation of it. I think that was Roy Skinner. But as far as who had the most success and who was able to bring that into the modern age, I'm going to have Kevin Stallings and that beautiful, beautiful cul-de-sac haircut sitting on my Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore at number three. That one might be a little controversial and get a little bit of hate, but I don't care.
You know what? Whenever you were explaining yourself at first, because you opened up with Roy, and I was like, oh, man, that's going to be a great pick. And then we did the audible to Kevin. And initially, I thought, But then as you were going through your reasoning and I thought about all the memories I have with Kevin Stallings, I thought,
I think he deserves... At our age, Kevin Stallings is
Vanderbilt basketball.
Memorial Magic. He is Vanderbilt basketball. Just the same way we were talking about Tim Corbin with, you know, any influential players or any of that associated with the Vanderbilt baseball program that we have in our memory of our lifetimes. Tim Corbin brought in and developed. That's the same way with Kevin Stallings.
That's
every,
a great point.
Almost every single positive memory we have associated with Vanderbilt basketball during our lifetimes is because of Kevin Stallings. And you've seen the state of Vanderbilt basketball since he left.
And so we're all of the age, too, that we don't remember a time before. We don't remember Vanderbilt basketball before Kevin Stallings. We're all at that age. I know, obviously, a lot of our older listeners do.
Skinner had some good years.
Skinner, Bredikoff.
CM Newton.
Ooh, can't forget about CM Newton. CM Newton, underrated.
I was thinking
maybe
about
honorable,
him.
Maybe honorable mention.
Definitely on my honorable mention.
That's a great one, Billy.
Yeah, and he was an
CM
AD.
Newton honorable mention.
Yeah, so he's definitely on my honorable mention. But yeah, Trev. Well, that's a great one, by the way. Kevin's not like
you
just,
got me back.
Hard
on
I mean, also the altercation with Joakim Noah is also just legendary.
I'll never
just,
forget
just
that
during
as,
a game.
As long as
I mean,
live.
you just don't get stuff like that anymore.
Well, you made a good point though too. Well, after your top two guys, like, again, we're not at Alabama. We're not at Auburn. Like, this is Vanderbilt, right? And it's not putrid. It's just hard. Like, you know, you all of three of us probably have two guys.
It's kind of putrid.
But, yeah, like,
putrid. It gets a little putrid.
It's a little putrid, but, I mean, there's enough history. You can go, like, you ask some older people, you go, okay, he's on mine. You know, but for us, we're a little bit younger. But, yeah it's not, you know, it's a smaller pool. So,
yeah,
it's tough. So, Trev, keep rolling.
Okay, I'm going to go with the guy next who I'm not sure if everybody here has him on their list. I think they do, but I'm going with the only man that kept 2000s Vanderbilt football relevant whatsoever. I'm going with Smoking Jay Cutler. Smoking Jay Cutler. I remember maybe two. I remember the Earl Bennett throw. And you know what? I also thought about this recently. Will, I'm with you. You brought up a great point to where you're like, do you remember the play or have you just seen it so many times you think you remember it? I don't know if I remember I definitely remember my dad's reaction, as we said. But Jay Cutler, maybe the most, I don't even know.
Billy asked if you ask random fans around the country,
Jay Cutler,
who is the it's either Tim Corbin or the only possible guy that could be above Tim Corbin is Jay Cutler.
Yes, maybe the most popular Vanderbilt, not maybe, I'd probably say the most popular Vanderbilt athlete of all time. And he gets hated. The Jay Cutler hate is disgusting, to be quite frank. One of the great Vanderbilt players of all time. I know Kyle Shermer has the records over him, but it's still in my book. Jay Cutler is the greatest quarterback in Vanderbilt history. Also, the greatest quarterback in Chicago Bears history. But with that being said, the Chicago Bears don't have a ton of quarterback history. But in every major statistical category, Jay Cutler is the best. That's my quarterback. Gave Vanderbilt fans one of the most, if not, I mean, outside of the national title, maybe the most important and special moment in Vanderbilt history, recent history at least, with the win over Tennessee in 2005. So just for that, I'm giving Jay Cutler a spot on my Mount Rushmore.
Will, you a big fan of that?
I love the Jay Cutler pick. It makes me not feel bad about not having him on my Mount Rushmore. Spoiler alert, he will not be my number four selection. I know he's an honorable mention. Smoking Jay. Definitely. I bring up consistently that Jay Cutler is the main source of relevance for Vanderbilt football and saves Vanderbilt from being shown on these insane stats of the last time they had a first-round quarterback selected.
Yes.
So thank you, Jay Cutler. And that's an incredible selection, Trevor. But there's only four spots, and I've already used three of them. So unfortunately, he's not on my list. But I love the selection.
Oh my God. What if the Titans had drafted him instead of Vince Young?
Might be a different story.
But then again, Super Bowl.
Jay Cutler never had an O-line. He never had an O-line. When he was at Chicago, their O-line was horrendous. When he was at Denver, their O-line was even worse. It was snapping the ball in shotgun. It was like when he was at Vanderbilt. No time. Yeah. And if he wasn't a bulky boy and wasn't used to that at Vanderbilt, I don't think he would have survived more than three or four seasons.
If he wasn't Indiana born and bred, then he's not making it.
Jay Cutler in college, I mean, he would bulldoze guys. But he got to the NFL, and I think he quickly realized he can't really truck anybody over anymore. So that took away the running element for him. Like in college, he was a legitimate dual threat quarterback. And so that, like, that was an aspect that was sort of taken away. He would run a little bit in the NFL, but he was forced to really be a sit in the pocket type guy. And just, I mean, he took some hits, man. I mean, like, he took some blows, right? I mean, to the ribs, like, he's probably lost a few ribs over the years in the NFL. So, Jay Cutler is one teetering on the line for me, but I ended up not going Jay Cutler either.
Oh my God.
I went ahead and I went with four coaches.
Interesting.
I chose that because players, I know players win games and they score the points and, you know, the touchdowns and the home runs, but I don't know. There's something about a Mount Rushmore at a college that it just feels right with, you know, the best four coaches. And that's what I had ultimately boiled it down to, because if I started thinking about players and I'm like, oh, if I have this guy, I got to have this guy. So I just went coaches. It's a lot easier that way. And I mean, let's face it, coaches are, I mean, they're the leaders of the program. So, Will, I wanted to pile on to your Kevin Stallings thing, but I had to put Kevin Stallings on my Mount Rushmore. You know, Kevin Stallings, and I know you touched on him a lot, Will, but, you know, he's a guy that was very personable. You know, he was great in the community, still lives in the area. He's got a son that plays professional baseball. You know, just a good dude. You know, guys like Kevin Stallings don't come around very often. The longevity is something I think about at Vanderbilt. I know it didn't end the way that Vanderbilt fans hoped for. But even at the end, like, he had his guys fighting, right? That Magnificent Seven, right? Like, you know, he was never going to put an embarrassing product on the floor. And I think that's what, you know, I think about when it comes to Kevin Stallings. Now, his teams had a different personality than most, right? They were shooting friendly, a lot of shooters. I guess maybe finesse, right? But he was he would get on you, right? I mean, let's face it, he threatened
old school.
Yeah, he was old school. We all remember the Wade Baldwin threat. Like, he would get on you.
Old school stuff. But, I will fucking kill you.
But
old school hard nose stuff.
But that was part of what made Kevin Stallings Kevin Stallings. He was black and white, right? He would speak his mind, right? He would never sugarcoat it. And that's lost in today's day and age, you know? I mean, you don't see a lot of coaches like that anymore. So Kevin Stallings, I think if you're a Vanderbilt fan, has to be on your Mount Rushmore. Will mentioned it. He sort of maintained Memorial Magic. Like, Rose Skinner was great. CM Newton was great. Jan Van Bredekhoff was awesome. Mm-hmm. But without Kevin Stallings, Memorial Magic might have died. And I know it had a really strong foundation, but I mean, Kevin Stallings, that's the glory days, at least for us, of Vanderbilt basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think it's some of the atmospheres, like, the atmospheres at Memorial have not been like that since Stallings. I mean, they just haven't.
Yeah. He raised the standard of Vanderbilt basketball. Yes. It was pretty much unacceptable for Vanderbilt with the amount of talent that he was able to consistently bring in. It was pretty much unacceptable for Vanderbilt to be losing in a play-in game. I mean, that's the standard that he created. He kind of created a prison of his own expectations, to be honest. And I think the control he had on the sideline is what made Bryce Drew so unbearable to Vanderbilt fans. It felt like you went from a grown man in charge of the program to somebody that was the opposite of black and white, speak your mind.
Like a summer camp AAU coach.
Yeah, just clapping away on the sideline. And I think that, along with some injuries and some other things that led to an 0-18 season, just became unacceptable for Vanderbilt fans. Because it felt like under Kevin Stallings, that team under Kevin Stallings, even if you rolled out the TDR staff, was not going to go 0-18 in the SEC. I know that's not true, but that is the way it felt. So, I'm happy that you agreed with me there on Kevin Stallings.
Yeah, I had to. I was thinking about it, and after you said it, I ended up, he was in my honorable mention, but I had to. I went ahead and went all coaches. It's just keeping it classy.
Well, we still got one more left.
Yep, still got one more left, and this is where it gets really hairy. So, Will, who's your fourth?
My number four is the only non-coach on my list. Trevor, you went with Jay Cutler. I'm going to go with Bill Wade.
Oh,
a former quarterback. Pick. First overall pick in 1952 of the LA Rams.
Preseason Heisman candidate.
Super Bowl champion with the Chicago Bears. You mentioned the best quarterback in Chicago Bears history. He won a championship with them. I believe he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as well. Second team All-American his senior season. I believe he also was the most valuable player in the SEC. So that's going to be, he is the only reason that Jay Cutler was not on my Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore. You had somebody that 50 to 60 years ago kind of took the same path as Jay Cutler, very successful college career. Obviously it's different in the 1950s. The stats aren't really comparable, very different game, but Bill Wade was a national star during that time. Obviously I wasn't alive in the 1950s, so this is just based off reading old articles and old stats. I believe he passed away in 2016, but Bill Wade, first overall pick in 1952, former Vanderbilt quarterback, and everything that you read as far as Bill Wade is, he was the consummate professional, incredible guy, and was able to lead the Chicago Bears to an NFL champion, Super Bowl championship, two-time Pro Bowler in the NFL, 100 greatest Chicago Bears players of all time. I'm not sure what list that is from, but yeah, Bill Wade's going to be my final Mount Rushmore Vanderbilt athletic. I don't even know how I'm going to finish that sentence I just started, but running through my list, Dan McGugin, Tim Corbin, Kevin Stallings, Bill Wade. On to your last one, Trevor.
On my last one, this one was tough. So I initially had, and this might have been a stretch. I think it was so much of a stretch that I didn't like it. I initially had Grantland Rice. Does anybody know who that is?
Yeah, he was a famous writer, right?
Yeah, he's one of the most famous, if not at one point, the most famous sports writer in America. Vanderbilt has a scholarship in his name. Previous award winners have been Buster Only, Skip Bayless have won this award. I think a homie of the pod, former VU Hustler writer, Bryce Smith, also won the Grantland Rice Award. Don't quote me on it.
Did Robbie Weinstein?
Did Robbie, hashtag thanks Robbie, also won the Grantland Rice Award?
He might have.
There used to be a Bill Simmons used to run a really good site on ESPN called Grantland.com. And it was named after Grantland Rice. And so he one of the most prolific sports writers in all of America. But he is not my fourth pick. My fourth pick on my Mount Rushmore is former Vanderbilt basketball superstar Clyde Lee. 1963 to 1966. You can make the argument that he's the greatest Vanderbilt basketball player of all time. Read off some of his stats here. Consensus first team All-American center 1966. With that being said, I said that Liam Robbins is the greatest center in Vanderbilt basketball history on Twitter, and a lot of people said Clyde Lee. I know he played center, but in today's game, he's probably going to be a four, so I don't consider him a center. Tweet at me your displeasure. I don't care. Two-time SEC Player of the Year, 1965-1966. NCAA All-Tournament Team, 1965. Led the Commodores to win an SEC title, not tournament, or it was a tournament title. No, it wasn't. Sorry, I'm misreading my notes. Not just an SEC tournament, but they won the SEC title 1964-65 and averaged 15 rebounds a game.
Wow.
Clyde Lee, probably the best basketball player in Vanderbilt history, was one of the early
Gladly.
Not the early, but just maybe the start of what we know as Vanderbilt basketball is Clyde Lee. So he's going to be on my Mount Rushmore. I think if you don't have Clyde Lee, you don't, which that's maybe a big statement to say, but I'll go ahead and say it. I think if you don't have Clyde Lee, you probably don't have what we know as Vanderbilt basketball now.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would agree with that. I mean, he's up in the rafters for a reason. You know, and so is a guy like Shane Foster. So, you know, Clyde Lee is a great pick. All right, for me, and I'm gonna get ripped for this. I already know, but I had to go with four coaches. I had to go with four coaches, and so waiting to pick my fourth. Again, I'm gonna get ripped for this, but Bobby Johnson.
He's on my honorable mention,
but
I don't hate that pick at all.
So, hear me out. Hear me out. He accomplished something that in his era, many people thought was not possible, right? He was like Vanderbilt football. Everybody was like, Vanderbilt football is dead, right? You will never succeed at Vanderbilt. He had a lot of seasons where he went 5-7, right? Just missed a bowl game. Five and six, right? So like he was on the doorstep a lot of seasons. But he had, and I still think we can say this, he had the most magical run of any Vanderbilt football coach, a 5-0 start. James Franklin never did that. Derek Mason never did that. Clark Lea hasn't done it yet. I don't think anybody else has done that. And I think that season, like, you think back about that 08 season, that was the first bowl game in what, over, was it 40 years, something like that? Like, I,
since
like
1982.
I look back at that one season and I think it carries weight. And I think you have to give Bobby Johnson credit for that. Clark Lea, if you ask Clark Lea, you know, the guy that had the most impact on his football career, he'll probably say Bobby Johnson. And so will a lot of other players. Javon Hay, Norval McKenzie, Hunter Hillenmeyer, Chris Williams. Like, he had a lot of really good players on his team and on his teams. And obviously, you know, they didn't end that season well, but they won the Music City Bowl. We talked about that season. I wanted to go with four coaches, and I had to go with Bobby Johnson because he, I don't know what the best word is, maybe stabilized, but, you know, again, he didn't have the success that I think he wanted, and he was upset with administration most years. Like, the administration did not help him at all, at all.
Did him zero favors.
Zero favors. So I just think it's hard because I wanted to put a player in here. I was thinking about David Price, Shane Foster, even some of the historical guys like Clyde Lea, you know, heck, even Dan McGugan. That was a great pick, Will. But I don't know. But something about Bobby Johnson holds a special place in my heart because he gave us some magic. He gave us that magical ride of an 08 season and that Music City Bowl. And we'll never forget it, right? We will never forget that 08 season. And so, again, rip me for it, but I had to go Bobby Johnson. And this is a tough job. Like, Vanderbilt is an impossible football job, borderline
hardest
impossible
job in America.
Like, and you know, he came very close a few years to making a bowl game, and he finally broke open the door and they made it. And I just think it carries weight. I think what he did at Vanderbilt carries a lot of weight. And, you know, I don't think we would have Clark Lea without Bobby Johnson. Like, we wouldn't have a lot of those really good players. So, you know, it's an interesting pick. It's probably a debated pick, but I ended up going with Bobby Johnson for my fourth. So George McIntyre, Tim Corbin, Kevin Stallings, and Bobby Johnson, the four best coaches in Vanderbilt sports history. I wanted to go with a player. I feel bad not going with any players or even an AD. Like, I think Candace Lea, 10 years down the road, she might be an option.
It's hard for me not to put Candace Lea in my Mount Rushmore right now, to be honest.
I'm so glad you said that, Billy, because I think Candace Story Lea is like one of the few – I don't want to say Clark Lea, it's way too early. Yeah. But just with what Candace Story Lea is already accomplished and accomplishing, is there's almost no doubt if she keeps even remotely – on the same path that she's on right now, that in 15 years she will be
no doubt
the Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore.
I'll ask this too. So she got hired in 2020. What, and so she's only been in her tenure now about 3 years. What Vanderbilt athletic director has done more in their entire career than Candace Story Lea has done in the first 3 years?
None. I mean, it's also you're battling against administration.
That's the big one.
None of us had David Williams, the Goldfather, on our list, but he was so handcuffed by the administration and Zeppelin.
Talk about getting put in an impossible situation. David Williams was destined to fail because they made him fail.
And the same way with Bobby Johnson. He just simply was never given the resources to succeed. And the fact that Bobby Johnson was able to bring in talent like Jay Cutler, like Earl Bennett, like Corey Chavis, I mean, Jordan, like Jamie Matthews. Winborn. Yeah, that's talent level that he got with no resources whatsoever. So I think Candace Story Lea, I'm not trying to, not trying to dismiss anything Candace Story Lea is doing, because I think in 10, 15 years, she will be on the Vanderbilt Mount Rushmore. But having the administration shift with Daniel Diermeier, has been, and Tommy McClelland has almost been just as big as what Candace Story Lea has done. Vanderbilt's actually willing to spend those SEC revenue checks on athletics like they should have been doing all along.
Yeah, fast forward 10 years, Candace Lee and Clark Lee will be on our Mount Rushmore. I guarantee you.
Yeah. You know. I'll ask this about your Bobby Johnson pick. Because I think I agree. I had Bobby on my honorable mention. I want to talk about his recruiting a little bit in regards or in correlation to the James Franklin success.
And he's a big part.
This might be a tired argument, but I remember there's been a lot of debate on message boards and Twitter and even conversations that we've had with our friends and people in public is people want to compare, I guess, the lack of success that Clark Lee has had up until this point to the success that James Franklin had early in their career. And I don't want to take away from what James Franklin did. It was obviously incredible and some of the best Vanderbilt memories that we will ever have. But James Franklin, player-wise, player personnel-wise, was put in a very much better situation than what Clark Lee was put in. So, yeah. So think about the players that Bobby Johnson recruited, some of them that Bobby Johnson developed that James Franklin inherited. Jordan Matthews, I guess Larry Smith, Zach Stacy, I believe, Chris Marv, Andre Howell, Casey Hayward. I mean,
Kyle Westman.
I mean, they had Walker May, Tim Fugger. They had some guys. Archibald.
I mean,
Barnes.
It's also why you can respect having Bobby Johnson on that list is,
yeah,
I know he retired afterwards, but James Franklin pillaged that program and Derek Mason was left with nothing. Then Derek Mason built it slightly up and then handed Clark Lee an absolute pile of dog shit to start out his Vanderbilt career as far as talent is concerned. I mean, Clark Lee literally started with a roster that would have struggled to compete at the FCS level. Really?
Yeah, and they did.
Like, I don't think the talent... They did. Yeah. They lost to and they got dominated by an FCS program in ETSU. And it wasn't just a lack of game plan. ETSU was more athletic and better than the players that Vanderbilt currently had on that roster that Derek Mason brought in. Like, I don't think that Derek Mason gets enough criticism.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I wanted him to be fired prior to the COVID year. But what Derek Mason did and the talent level that he had coming in at the end of his tenure was literally not on an FBS football program level, much less an SEC level. Going
maybe
0-9,
some of the worst,
not being able to finish a season, and then coming out, you could see in that ETSU game, in the first game of Clark Lee's tenure, he simply had no talent on the roster, and that was not the case for James Franklin.
Yeah, yeah,
I think too what Clark I know we're not talking about football quite yet, but what Clark Lee inherited was probably some of the worst, if not the worst talent Vanderbilt football has ever had in our
lifetime.
You
don't wish that
would
on
you
your
say?
Own enemy.
No. I mean, Derek Mason killed Vanderbilt football. So I don't think it's comparable. But I do think a lot of James Franklin's success comes from the guys that Bobby Johnson brought in.
Yep.
He immediately took Bobby Johnson kids to a bowl. Granted, they didn't win it, but still took Bobby Johnson kids to a bowl first year.
Yeah.
So into like you said, Billy, we can rattle off a lot of historic Vanderbilt players who are Bobby Johnson guys.
Exactly.
And I think you're right too. He's just a guy who just didn't get any help from the administration. It's not David Williams' fault, really. It's just once again Kirkland being Kirkland. But yeah, don't even know if he was really that bad of a coach, but he was just. And he was just chained to a dumpster.
Yeah,
really.
You think about the dynamic duo of Vanderbilt football history, Jay Cutler and Earl Bennett. Their coach was Bobby Johnson. Like, you know, that carries weight. So I had to throw Bobby in my list. So again, for me, George McIntyre, Tim Corbin, Kevin Stallings, and Bobby Johnson. Will, you're four?
Dan McGugan, Tim Corbin, Kevin Stallings, Bill Wade.
Boom.
And Trevor?
I have Perry Wallace, Tim Corbin, Jay Cutler, Clyde Lee.
Boom! Nice mix. Nice mix there. I wanted to have a nice mix, but I think
yes.
All the difference of all of ours is nice. I like that. You know, we didn't have too many similar guys. But there it is. There it is. Vanderbilt sports Mount Rushmore. And guys, this is something that you know, again, I'm surprised we haven't done yet, but we need to make a graphic or something of this because I think that'd be pretty cool. But before we end, real quick, special announcement. This is my final official door report as a host. As the host of the door report, I am officially passing the torch to Will Byram, my good friend of 3 years. He's been with me from the beginning, and I trust him to take advantage of this opportunity and continue to build the door report. Trevor Hulin will stay on the door report team, and they will keep it rolling. This is a handoff to Will and Trevor. I'll be joining Chris Lee at VandySports.com and our coverage is going to be special. It's going to be the best coverage that Vanderbilt fans have ever seen. The door report. I was so glad to hear these two guys will gladly take the reins. That's the only thing I was worried about when we met last week. Will they be willing and excited to take the reins? And they said, hell yeah, we're in. So Will and Trevor, thank you for taking the reins. And Will, thank you for sticking with me for as long as you did. and Trevor, I mean, your addition has been massive. I mean, it's just, you can't put into words, like, your addition probably has kept the door port alive, and that's huge. So thank you to you guys. I will still be coming on. We'll still be doing the spaces. I'll come on occasionally. But I'm going to teach these guys how to run a podcast, and we're going to keep the report rolling. So, again, it's sad. It's sad, but you know, the foundation is laid. It's like Bobby Johnson for James Franklin, right? You're passing the torch. You're keeping it rolling, and the door port is not going anywhere. So again, I want Vanderbilt fans to know that if you're not subscribed, like, I want this to be a good partnership. Door report, VandySports.com. We're not competitors. Like, some no. people might think we are, but the door report is by the fans and for the fans, and we want to keep that rolling. So if you're not already subscribed to VandySports.com, I think both of you already are. Join VandySports.com. We got a lot of the same. I want to bring a little bit of the door report to VandySports.com and keep that rolling. So,
Billy, again, I'll tell you my VandySports.com username, so you'll know who I am whenever I'm posting.
I need to know that. I need to know that. Well, I don't know if I want to know yours. But no, in all honesty, guys, it's been an awesome ride, and you know, I wouldn't trade the last few years for anything. So thank you again. The door port is in good hands, and I'd expect you all to keep it rolling. Maybe another Dog Days series, football season preview, all that kind of good stuff. But Joey Dwyer, it's going to be Joey Dwyer and I really kind of leading the charge at VandySports.com and giving Vanderbilt fans good content. We'll be joining the spaces. I'll be joining the pod occasionally, and we're going to have some fun. We'll still have some fun. I'll stop by the tailgates. This is not the end of the door report, and it's just the beginning of a new age at VandySports.com. So guys, thank you so much.
Billy, a rising tide lifts all boats. When me and you started this like 3 years ago, I knew you were destined for bigger and better things, but me and Trevor, when you asked, are you guys wanting to continue this last week when we met? Me and Trevor had similar responses. You're going to have to drag us away from this microphone. The door report will continue. TDR will continue.
You're going to have to kill me. You're going to have to put a gun to my head and pull the trigger.
The best phrase to describe, and thank you, Billy, for everything. It's been incredible the last 3 years. I don't want to glaze over that. This is obviously the most hostile transition that you've ever seen. We're very angry at Billy. Very, very mad at him for betraying us. But the inmates are officially running the asylum. So a little preview That's of so what true. Me and Trevor's first solo episode title is going to be. The inmates are officially running the asylum now. But thanks, Billy. It's been incredible, and you're going to do incredible things over at VandySports.com.
Absolutely. Congrats, Billy. No one else deserves this more than you. VandySports.com is going to have an absolutely slam dunk, stellar addition to the boards, to the podcasts, all your insight. I was talking to your good friend yesterday, David Wilson. And I told him, I was like, nobody deserves this more than Billy. In fact, we were talking and I was like, if Billy turned it down, I would actually be very upset with him. This is an opportunity that he deserves. And this is an opportunity that he should 110% take. We are very, very excited for him. And Billy, thank you for starting the Door Report. I know a lot of fans, no fans really ever had a Vanderbilt podcast or a Vanderbilt platform in which they could come listen to, interact. There was never really a dedicated fan run Vanderbilt site. And now Billy has created one. Billy has started a revolution, as we like to say. And so I'll say this, Billy walked so we could run. Billy laid the foundation. The cornerstone has been laid. Now it's time to get building, baby. The Door Report ain't going nowhere. Like I said, you're going to have to kill me to keep me off this microphone, baby. We're just getting started.
As Leonardo DiCaprio said, we ain't effing leaving, but the Door Report is not going anywhere. And the spaces, the spaces will never die. Like I think the space, everyone loves the, I mean, that should be a weekly thing, especially during football season, basketball, baseball.
Oh yeah.
That's what the fans love. And the Door Report is for the fans, and y'all are going to keep that rolling. Again, I will not be a stranger, and there's a ton of content rolling. But again, VandySports.com, that's where I'll be if you want to find me over there. Still, of course, covering Vandy. That's the good thing here, right? It's not like I'm going over,
yes,
you know, to cover the Chicago Cubs or, you know, totally. Like,
Hogbeat.com.
I'm still in Nashville covering Vandy, and you know, it's a dream opportunity. So, but guys, thank you again for being willing to take this this opportunity, take the reins, and take hold of the Door Report. And the Door Report is here to stay. So, everybody, stay with the Door Report. If you haven't joined Vandy Sports, join that. We're all covering Vandy as well. So we're all still covering the doors. But one last time for Trevor Hoolan, Will Byram, I'm Billy Derrick. So long. You've been listening to another episode of The Door Report. The inmates are running the asylum. Next episode.